The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul. Yes, it does. Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa, broadcasting live from KCNR Studios down in downtown Redding, California. I'm here this morning with my trusted producer. How are you, my dear?
Good morning. I'm as always perfect on my favorite work, job.
I'm also here with Patricia Santangelo, who's my co-host. How are you, Patricia?
Oh, pretty good.
Great. We're broadcasting live, and we are streaming live all over the United States. You can listen in on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio, 96.5 FM. The music does sound better. And we are streaming live at KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com. So, we're here this morning. We're excited about this program. And we need to really start thinking about our children and the future of our country. And that's what this is about today. We're going to go into some things and some specifics. We'll be having a guest who's going to be calling in very shortly, who had been with the California Assembly, and we're pretty excited about the fact that we're going to be able to go through the school systems and kind of talk about some solutions. What are we going to do? That's the main thing. Patricia came up with a list of laws not too long ago. These aren't mandates. These aren't policies. These aren't regulations. And she really did spearhead a lot of things for a lot of us here in this county. And we're very thankful to you, Patricia, for all the information you've given us and edumacating us.
My pleasure.
So I think that one of the things I'd like to start with this morning is to clarify some things. And that is, I think we want to think about some sentences here just as we go into this whole program. The first sentence is, what's wrong with these sentences? Government-funded schools, state-funded schools, state-controlled curriculum, federal-controlled curriculum. What's wrong with those sentences? Is there a word there that bothers anybody? And what word is that, Patricia?
Controlled.
And who has the jurisdiction over that? So, you know, that's the thing. I think right. that the understanding that the state really has the jurisdiction over a lot of our school policies and over a lot of our school mandates. And one thing I do want to ask you before our guest does come on, is it really a fact that we have to oblige a policy or a mandate, or is that something that just comes into compliance by vote of the school board, you know?
Well, if we don't, we see what happens. Sacramento takes over, don't they? They come up with laws really fast, and they pass them very quick. It'll make your head spin how fast they can change everything for you. So as though they don't have enough laws already on the books to control everything, if you try to do anything at all, they're going to come in and they're going to make a change. They're going to tamp down pretty hard. This is their main area of controlling future generations, so they're not going to let you have it.
Yeah, and the thing is that they have in the past controlled the school boards. I mean, we're under this illusion that the school boards actually have control over things, but I know that there's been a lot of conservative school boards that have been overruled by the state, as you said, and overruled by mandates, policies, etc.
Well, yeah, and if you look at Governor Newsom just passed this year in September, AB 1078, to get even more control, because people were starting to say, well, we need to get on the board. If we get more conservatives on the board, then we can make some changes to the curriculum. So he passed this one that prohibits school boards and county offices of education from prohibiting the use of an existing textbook curriculum or other instructional material that contains inclusive and diverse perspectives. So it prohibits the removal for any other reason too. So they're already tamping down on the boards and any kind of power that they might have over curriculum. So, and he's not, it's not stopping there. There's some other ones in the works.
Yeah, you kind of wonder what the solution really is. I mean, do we keep doing the same thing over and over again? Do we keep trying to say, hey, we can solve the problem the same way we've never solved the problem? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you think a real solution is? Oh, I got a big grin out of that one. Okay.
I think that the real solution is to start over. The schools, the public school system, if you go ahead and study the history of it, it's all built on the foundation of socialism. And so the foundation's rotten, basically, and you're not gonna fix that. So it really needs, they need to lose their money, they need to lose their support, they need those of us who know what we're doing and know how to actually educate children to get in there and do the job. But it's going to take an army. It really is.
You know, this is great, because that's the perfect segue into our guest. And our guest is Steve Baldwin. Steve, how are you, sir?
I'm doing just fine, Terry. How are you doing today?
Doing good, buddy. I mean, you know, no one's hurt me yet, so I'm good. Of course, it's still early. So I'd like you to tell people a little bit about yourself, what your involvement is, you know, has been with the school system here in California, et cetera. So go ahead, sir. Give us a little bit about Stephen Baldwin.
Well, I've been involved in the conservative movement for most of my life, worked in Washington, D.C., for all kinds of conservative leaders back in the 1980s, and served on some advisory committees for Ronald Reagan, so forth and so on. And then I returned back home and ran for office and won a seat to the California legislature. And that was the last time we took majority, and I was appointed chairman of the education committee, which blew my mind. I was only a freshman. But apparently there hadn't been a conservative chair in that committee for 40 years before me, and there hasn't been one since then. So I decided to use my position to really try to look underneath the whole blob, the education blob, and find out what was really going on with public education in California. And I just discovered horror story after horror story. And during that whole time period, I got involved in also running conservatives for school boards all over San Diego County. We won around 40 different races. We took control of several districts.
But what year was this?
1990.
Okay.
1991. We actually won school board races in two different cycles.
Okay.
We're probably a total of maybe over 80 seats we won.
Okay.
There, I think it's probably the biggest sweep of school board seats by conservatives anywhere in the country, at least in modern political campaign history that I'm aware of. So I was heavily involved in education, both in terms of electing conservatives to school boards and overseeing policy in California. And it shaped my opinion of what we're going to discuss today, because it led me to believe that the left is solidly in control of our education system, and they are using our education system to transform America to a socialist police state.
Yeah, you've made the statement that school boards aren't the answer. You want to go into that a little bit?
Well, you know, I really thought they were at one time, but it occurred to me that there has been so much centralization of power away from the local school boards to Sacramento or to Washington, D.C., that we have little say. And even all these fellow conservatives who won, they were unable to do much at all. I mean, they had some good things. They accomplished a few good things here and there. But very quickly, a lot of them were voted out of power just 2 or 3 years later.
Right.
Some were subjects of lawsuits. Some were the subjects of recall. And all those school districts we took control of are now the leading left-wing school districts in San Diego County. So maybe we paused a few things here and there. But the problem is the conservatives on those boards are only making decisions within the confines of existing state and federal mandates, which the left has put in place. The whole idea of locally controlled schools, that hasn't been true since the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even when I was in Sacramento, the Rhinos were leading the charge on centralizing education power in Sacramento. And the Rhinos in Congress were leading the charge on Goals 2000 and all these other federal education programs, which passed with the support of the Chamber of Commerce and all kinds of Republican-oriented groups. And I was attacked by the California Chamber of Commerce because I, as chairman of the Education Committee, refused to sign off on Goals 2000. I led the charge against it. I said, why would you want to centralize standards and all kinds of other education policy in Washington, D.C.? You totally undermine any kind of local control or local accountability. And they told me I was just a right-wing nut, blah, 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 blah. And, of course, that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little accountability right now. The standards, the textbooks, school facilities, school discipline issues. I mean, almost all those issues are massively controlled by either Sacramento or Washington, D.C. And so as a school board member, all you're doing is enforcing state and federal mandates. Your ability to actually impact the school and try to make it work for the people is minimum to zero.
Yeah, you know, it's. Can you tell the story of Vista School District in San Diego? Because a lot of people are, they believe that if we get enough conservatives on the school boards that we actually have local jurisdiction. Can you explain what happened there? I thought, when I read that, I thought that was a really good example.
Deidre Holliday, one of my good friends, who I think lives up in your neck of the woods nowadays, or somewhere around there, was one of our superstars. In fact, she probably is listening to the show, and she got elected along with two other conservatives. And the left just freaked out. And one of the main issues they freaked out about was the fact that they passed a resolution saying that teachers can introduce information in biology that is alternative to evolution. They didn't ban evolution. Contrary to all the headlines, all they said was that teachers and students could challenge evolutionary theory with other theories. And that alone, just allowing full debate on the creation issue, created such a national uproar, it was unbelievable. All kinds of money came flowing in from the left, and they recalled people on that school board, and we lost control there. Within a couple of years, it was no longer controlled by the right. So that little tiny change, allowing evolution to be challenged, led to millions of dollars pouring in from all over the country, and they destroyed the conservatives there within a few years. And now that school district's pretty much back to, you know, doing whatever the left wants it to do. That kind of gives you an example of how little we're able to affect change. And the tiniest little change, like, hey, can we challenge evolution for a few minutes, led to such an uproar, it ended up resulting in all the conservatives eventually either no longer running for office or being recalled. And now, it's just 2 years later, it's one of the leading leftist school districts in California. So, you know, we spent all this time, money, energy electing these conservatives, and I'm thinking, you know, there's got to be a better way. You know, God calls us to be in charge of education for our children. Mm-hmm. And maybe if we spent this time, money, and energy another way, and creating homeschool networks and private Christian schools, et cetera, maybe we'd have more impact on the culture.
Yeah, you know, the myth of the public schools being an American institution is really something. I think that the process of people saying, well, gee, it's, you know, but that really isn't the truth, and it's not really the history. You want to give us a little bit of that?
Yeah, the whole public school movement is not an American, thing. It was not in the founding documents. It was not in the Federalist Papers. It was not in the Declaration. It was not in the Constitution. It wasn't even widespread throughout the country until the late 1800s, almost 100 years after the founding. And the people who were pushing for a public school movement were people like Thomas Dewey of the Dewey Decimal System. And they were all part of an organized group called the Progressives, and the same kind of people that progressives are today. They were very much hostile to the American founding. They were hostile to Christianity. They were hostile to a limited government. And they wanted to use the public school movement as kind of a social change vehicle. And the only way they could do that is to make the public school a mandatory feature of American life. And so they started organizing back east. Boston was the first public school movement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there wasn't even a demand for it. We have researchers like Sam Blumenthal, who've done the great Sam Blumenthal, who've done research on a literacy rate. The literacy rate was higher before we had the public school movement than it is today. We had more people able to read in America before the public school movement than we have today. So their whole reason, oh, we have to get more kids educated, was complete baloney. And of course, they had a hard time affecting their agenda right away because America was still largely a fairly conservative, Christian-oriented culture. And most of the teachers came out of that culture, and most of them were fairly good. And it wasn't really until, you know, 1960s and 70s where the agenda of Thomas Dewey and his public school movement advocates actually started producing the kind of radical teachers to affect change and to be able to convert our school system into a social change system as they had all desired from the very beginning. And so, yeah, they wrote about this. You can find documents about all these people. It was a nefarious movement that had nothing to do with increasing literacy, had nothing to do with creating productive people for America.
Right.
It had everything to do with breaking Americans away from their parents, their religion,
right,
and America's founding values.
That good old word, control. Folks, if you'd like to call in, you have a question for Steve. The phone number is 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567. We've got about 6 minutes to the break, and I want to start with, what are some of the solutions? I mean, obviously, if we keep doing the same thing over and over again with false hope, you know, the hope of, or at least that's what's being expressed here, the false hope of the parents can change this on a local level, we can change it via the school boards, et cetera. What would be the beginning of the solutions that we'd have to have? And I'd like to really talk about that quite a bit, because we've already talked about what's wrong. We know it's wrong. It's awful. It's really bad. And I say it was bad. It's really bad. It's bad. So how do we fix it?
Well, of course, there's alternatives. There's always alternatives. Alternative is to reject government control of our children's minds and go with private options. And I know this is difficult for many families because we have increased our taxes so much in America that in most families, both parents work, unlike 100 years ago when that wasn't necessary. And so, you know, but there's even options within the homeschool option. And there's out here in San Diego, for example, we have all kinds of different systems, homeschool systems. For example, homeschool co-ops, where groups of 10 parents gather together, they yank all their kids out of public school, and they create a kind of a co-op. and they go in and they for example rotate where they meet for all the kids might meet in one house for 1 week, and then it rotates to the other 10 families, and they may co-opt their money and maybe hire tutors, maybe even be online tutors that are more knowledgeable and have more expertise than all the parents do in various subjects. And they do all these things so that the parents who do have situations where both of them are working, the impact upon them is not as great as they might think. So that kind of configurations are happening all over the country. There's organizations that help parents find resources. I can't tell you how many tons of online resources there are for the homeschool movement now. I have friends that make a living on having an online resource. One friend, he's an expert in classical education. He talks about how America borrowed our ideas for the Constitution from all the great ideas of Western thinkers, going back to Israel, Greece, Rome,
sure.
England. And so that our children understand the roots of American constitutional values. And you have to pay a few dollars to subscribe to his online show. And thousands of homeschoolers all over America do. I mean, there's a whole cottage industry that has sprung up to cater to homeschoolers, to help them with textbooks, to help them with online different presentations, to help them with how they configure their lives around homeschooling. And all the left's always going, well, they're not socialized. These homeschool kids are a bunch of idiots because they don't know anything about how to play with other kids. That's all baloney. Homeschoolers figure out ways to socialize. They all network online. They all gather together for activities all the time. Here in San Diego, if you see a bunch of kids playing in a park in the middle of the school day, well, those are homeschoolers. And they all get together. I mean, even the homeschoolers in this area, they have a prom. All the homeschoolers have a prom where all the homeschools in the whole county participate, and they have a big dance.
Well, I think one of the things about homeschooling and these other things, and we'll talk about private schools and stuff after the break, and I know Patricia has some questions for you, but I guess one of the things that's kind of difficult is the fact that this all sounds really good, but that's going to take some effort from the parents. The problem we have is parents aren't making that effort, I think that because what you're saying all makes a lot of sense, but it does, and also there's a lot of, I know a lot of single mothers that, you know, have 2-3 kids. They're working a job, they're doing this, they're doing that, and public school is just the easiest path for them. And there are millions of people like that. So I kind of want to get into that, and Christina, I'm going to want to go off to an early break. So, Steve, my friend, if you could hang on through the break, we are going to go to our one and only break. We're on with Steve Baldwin. If you have a question or a comment, phone number is 530-605-4567, 605-4567, and time has come for 51. Let's get it done.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Shout out to Redding Rancheria. Appreciate you guys for all your help. With the help that you guys gave us, we were able to stick around, retain some of our employees, and make sure all the customers got what they needed. Thank you, guys.
Hi there. Us here at the Post Office Saloon would like to thank the Redding Rancheria for supporting us and our community through the COVID pandemic.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Classical music lovers, listen up. Internationally known piano player Olga Popolova is presenting a concert called The Not-So-Invisible World of Female Composers. featuring the works of Cecile Chaminade, Clara Schumann, Florence Price, and many others. Wednesday, January 24th at St. James Church in Reading. Ms. Kopalova is performing this benefit concert to show her appreciation to our community who warmly received her family fleeing the Russian-Ukrainian war. Proceeds from the $20 tickets will benefit the Foundation for Performing Arts Education and Reading Piano Angels. Student tickets are $10. Pay at the door or go online to readingpianoangels.com. Olga Kopalova is the principal pianist for the Sao Paulo Symphonic Orchestra in Brazil. This one-night-only performance at 7 p.m. Wednesday, January 24th at St. James Lutheran Church on Shastaview Drive in Reading. World-class classical piano for a good cause. Wednesday, January 24th at St. James Church. Get tickets at the door or go online to readingpianoangels.com.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
We'd like to thank the Reading Rancheria for all their community support, including the bike shop. They do so much for our community, and we're beyond grateful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rancheria. You are the ones we can always count on to help us out in tough times. They're the people that have always been there for us, much more so than anyone else in our community. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Reading Rancheria. Proud to play our part.
All right. Sally Lou, good job, honey. Good music. Yeah, you should have seen Dominic. Or maybe not. Anyway, so... It's okay, buddy. You're supposed to have rhythm. And Patricia has rhythm. I've got rhythm. Christina has rhythm. And Christina, I believe that Steve, are you there? I think we have a call on the line. Is that correct? Okay.
We have Steve from Siskiyou, and we have our guest Steve. So we.
Okay, Steve from Siskiyou.
All right. Who would you like to have first?
Is that who's first?
Who you'd like to have on the line first?
Steve from Siskiyou, and let's make him quick. How you doing, Steve? Steve, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm trying to log in so I can hear the program.
Uh-huh.
One question.
Okay.
Oh, Terry, I just wanted to applaud you for bringing Steve on. That you're traveling all over down south these days with your family and making other people aware of the fight that's going on, so I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
The thing is that, I was listening to Poke the Harness Nest, too, and they brought up this woman being shot in the window of the insurrection. And, we should be in the streets over this kind of stuff. The thing with Lavoie Finnegan being shot down by the FBI... The CIA,
yep.
We should be in the streets, but, because we're so heavily taxed, I see it every morning out my front window here, the moms and pops dropping their kids off at school.
Uh-huh.
We're so heavily taxed,
mm-hmm.
we can't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And, I brought attention to the constitutional sheriffs. Everybody is more informed about the power of the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
It still hasn't gotten anywhere because we got a bunch of state-owned sheriffs.
Mm-hmm.
So, the thing is that we've got to keep the money locally.
Hey, Steve, do you have anything in here for our guest?
I was going to ask him what he thought about that solution, because, again, he's bringing a point, a new...
What solution?
Action, like self...
You're talking to me?
Kids.
No, Steve. Steve. Hello.
The state is going to come into that.
Right.
Steve.
Yeah, he was going to address that, buddy.
Okay.
Okay.
Go
ahead and address that. Thank you, Siskiyou Steve. Go ahead, Steve.
So, what's the question again?
I think the question is... I think the question is about the money and if we keep the money locally. And I think he's talking about property taxes and keeping them locally in the county. And it isn't a matter of whether we keep them locally or not. It's a matter of what they're going to spend it on. And that sounds really good. But if you have, if you have counties that are going to do that and boards of supervisors that are going to do that, that's great. So, convince your board of supervisors. I'm not really sure where that went with where you were, but I do know that, is that all we have on the line right now, Christina?
We have just our guests, mainly.
Very good. Okay, so with that, Patricia has a couple of questions for you, and if you could, Patricia, fire away, girl.
Hey, Steve. Yeah. I want to know what your ideas are for people who just don't feel motivated to homeschool. You know, homeschooling takes a certain, you have to be really dedicated to want to go from full-time public schooling to homeschooling. That's a big leap for a lot of people. And then on top of that, there are people who would love to homeschool, but they really simply can't. Maybe the single mom who's living at poverty level, she's working two jobs, she doesn't have any family around. There are people who just, it's not working for them, and or maybe we just haven't gotten them to the place psychologically where they're ready to embrace homeschooling. So it just seems overwhelming. So do you have other kinds of solutions that would be more an easier transition from the public school, you know, living off the government kind of a point of view, getting something a little easier than that? Than homeschooling.
Well, yeah, private Christian schools. I mean, it is kind of stunning to me to realize there are hundreds of thousands of churches in America whose facilities sit empty Monday through Friday. And they have classroom space, and they usually have a body of people who worship there, many who may be retired teachers or at least are knowledgeable about various subjects to be able to teach. And yet, those churches rarely take advantage of it. And so we need the pastors of America to wake up and realize that we're in a full-on cultural war for the soul of America. And every single conservative-oriented Christian church needs to have a school. And if they're too small, they need to go in with maybe two or three other like-minded churches and collectively form a school together. And there's going to be people who maybe can't afford the tuition that there's going to have to be some scholarship money raised by the church and try to help out those who cannot afford the full tuition. That's an option that everyone needs to think about, and they don't have that option in their community. They need to go sit down with their pastor and find out how can we make this happen.
Steve?
Yeah.
I had four children that went to Christian schools. All of them went, and it was very expensive. And we were able to afford that. But Christian schools are very, very expensive. And I know there's many, many churches where we live here in Shasta County that have schools. And so I think that realistically, I hear what you're saying. It'd be nice if they would scholarship that and the churches would reach out, but I think that we have a church and state situation that so many, I'll just call them lily-livered pastors, follow along, and they're afraid of losing their 501c3, and anything political that you do, and this could be considered political in their minds, they won't do. So, Christian schools are a solution, and I mean, my kids are products of that, I think. And that is a solution, but something I know there's some other things you had talked about that are feasible and palatable for the single mom who's working, or the poor family that's working. What can they do if they're both working jobs? And Steve, I think one of the points that Siskiyou Steve was trying to make was the fact that a lot of people are working two jobs. They got their kids, they're working two jobs. And with everything being so expensive, I know since 2021 in California, everything's doubled. It's doubled. So, you know, when you look at that, how do you – so I guess, Patricia, I think this is following along your line of thinking, and that is, you know, where do you go that's a better transition than paying for a private school, which is very, very expensive? And then there's the other part, are they accredited or not? And does that matter? Because a lot of – it probably doesn't matter. But anyway – I've got Patricia shaking her head, and she knows that stuff. Anyway, so go ahead, sir.
I think we're early on in this movement. You know, there's a whole group out there called Public School Exodus. If you go to the website, they have all kinds of different alternatives and ideas. And we are so early in this movement to break away from public schools that
I think there's a lot of things that will happen, but maybe have not happened yet, to make this option more feasible. Because you're right, there's a lot of Christian schools out there that are they're expensive, and I see, you know, some of the churches in my area offer scholarships to their school, the ones that have schools on site, and single parents are more likely able to take advantage of the educational opportunity. And there are, you know, there are programs out there where you can sock away money early on for your children and be tax exempt, both state and federal, where the money is put away in a certain account, like an IRA, is, you know, not deductible, and it has to be saved for education. It can be used for private schools. But, you know, a parent has to be thinking way in advance, years in advance, to really take advantage of those programs and benefit from them. We talked money away long before we had even had children, my wife and I. But, you know, there's going to be people who cannot do it until there are more options out there. I'm not going to claim all the solutions are here.
Oh, no. I just think that
they're not yet.
And I understand that. I mean, what you've offered is fantastic. I'm just saying that there is a problem. The challenge I think we have in society right now, especially in the state of California, is we have this huge movement of either initiatives. Let's have an initiative to stop this horrible policy. We might even come up with an initiative with parental rights. I mean, even saying that, I feel stupid. Parental rights? What is that supposed to be? You know, of course you have parental rights. Okay, so I guess the position is that if people keep believing that they can change things through the school board, and as you said, and I'm sure that this might happen, and I want your thoughts and comment on this, we have 32 Democrats in a Senate, a state Senate of 40. That means there's 8 Republicans, and 62 in the Assembly out of 80, and the other 18 are Republicans, but wait, 4 of the 18 vote with the Democrats all the time, so it's 66-14, and we have the spawn of Satan as our governor. So how do you actually move from policy or mandate to where they're passing laws? And I've got a dozen of them in front of me that were given to me by Patricia when I first met her, who's been incredible in studying these laws. So I guess the thing is, do we want to encourage people to do things that aren't going to help anyway? That just ends up discouraging the 80% of the 100%, and you end up with 20% that will still fight. So I guess what we're looking for is, if we're going to take these school systems, we're going to tear them down, is that what we do? And if we do, we need to find solutions for that. Go ahead.
Well, I think as public school systems increasingly start challenging parental rights, which is a fairly modern phenomenon, literally in the last 10 years, and all the woke stuff and the transgender stuff and the homosexual stuff, as that becomes so dominant, I think it's going to help our movement grow and come up with more options. I mean, there are so many very wealthy Christian businessmen in this country, and very few have invested in education. I mean, I want to see, Christian businessmen, instead of spending, $10 million on, some museum or whatever, invest in the local school and with generous scholarship programs for especially the single parents who can't afford it. We're not seeing that happen yet. I mean, it hasn't really hit our people yet that there has to be a large movement, and it has to happen quickly, because the reason why America is lurching to the left the last few years is that these people are all brainwashed in the public school system. And now we're going to create subsequent generations of public school graduates, and they're going to convert America into a socialist nightmare, where we have no parents right at all, we have no religious freedom. And so this movement that we're talking about, creating all these different private school and homeschool options, is at the very beginning of its founding. It needs to grow with much more vigor, much more funding involved, much more attention from our donor type class, and so that we have the options we need for all people, regardless of where they are in the economic scale. Because you're right, we just don't have we're not large enough to provide all the opportunities for especially lower class parents to be able to escape the public school system. We're not quite there yet.
Right.
And we have to compete also with public schools, you know, sports, and they have all these extracurricular.
Right.
Well, we're going to have to have private schools that are strong and big enough eventually that they offer all kinds of athletic programs and all kinds of music programs and a prom and all these extracurricular things that makes parents not want to leave the public school system. We're going to have to offer those things to make the kids just as excited about a private school network as they would the public school network. We're not quite there in that category either. And thankfully, the left's helping us. The left is pushing so many radical agendas in our schools upon the minds of our children that I think we're at the cusp of a...
Well, I think, and you're right, and that does change the parents' mind. You know, thank God for the mama bears and everything. The point is that they are uniting, but they're uniting around changing the school boards. They're uniting around things that obviously they can't change. They unite around something, then there's a law passed. How long do you really think before Governor Newsom says, you know what, state curriculum, that's the way we're going to go, period. I got it passed in the Senate, in the state. I got it passed in the Assembly. I signed it off. That's what we're doing. You don't like it. Tough move. What do you, I mean, I guess I'm speaking for maybe a grandfather that's frustrated with everything. But the thing, I mean, our solution was to pull them out and put them in private school. But again, go ahead, sir.
Well, I think, unfortunately, we're going to have to go through a phase where a lot of our people do feel that, oh, we're going to take over school boards.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care if they can't do it in San Diego, and I don't care if they weren't able to do it well in Riverside. We're going to do it right here. Unfortunately, maybe our people are going to have to learn the lessons the hard way, spend a lot of time, money, and energy taking over school boards, and then a couple years down the road going, oh, my God, we can't do this because of state mandate. We can't do this because of federal mandate. And they, after a year or two of hitting walls, they will drop out or refuse to run for the school board again and join the other movement, our movement, the movement we're talking about here in this conversation, to create more options.
Well,
so
I think
we have to go through this thought first.
Sure. And I think that all makes sense. The challenge is we keep talking about mandates and policies. How about laws? 2011, SB 48, mandates that children in grades K through 12 in all instruction in social sciences admire the role and contributions of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Americans. California public schools must, not may, not can, not maybe, must implement the requirements through supplemental materials, i.e. handouts, homosexual biographies, classroom discussions, essays, homework, outside speakers such as drag queen story time. So that's a law, and I've got about 25 of them in front of me, and so these are laws, and we keep talking about mandates and policy. I mean, the only way you can change these laws is legislatively, I would believe, or just don't submit to the tyranny. Go ahead, sir.
Well, you could. I have told some conservatives who were headstrong on taking over school districts. I go, you know what? If you will use your majority control of that district, assuming you take majority control, to be a battering ram in the courts, then go for it. But you have to commit to finding your own attorney because the school district attorneys are all.
That's right.
And you got to hire your own outside attorney, and you have to challenge a lot of these mandates and laws because I'll tell you right now, a lot of the laws like the ones you decide, they infringe on child endangerment laws.
Yes, they do.
Decency laws, parental rights, First Amendment, religious rights. I mean, there's a whole slew of federal laws and protections that these laws being signed into the codes by Gavin Newsom violate. And you know, if there's one thing I can say that might be of value for taking over a school board is using your standing as a school board member to actually sue and go to court and beat these guys. But you're going to have to, you know, make sure you have an attorney. You're going to have to make sure you have the money to do that. Do you have the willpower to do it? And so forth and so on. So I can see that being actually beneficial for running for office if that's the goal. But you've got to be an aggressive individual and willing to do that. because I do think a lot of these laws...
Well, you'd have to have a PI. You've got to get a preliminary injunction. And if you do that, going to court, that's the only thing these people have to learn. Because if you go to court, you could be in there 10 years. I mean, it's not going to do anything. I don't know that we have time. But a preliminary injunction, you may be able to get shoved through if you show the standing and you show the harm. And you need remedy, you can push through that PI maybe within, I don't know, maybe three to 6 months. And I think that people need to be educated on that. One of the routes we're taking is to go through initiatives. Okay, we're gonna do an initiative, right? Okay, so we do that. Okay, so what does that do? What does that cost you? What does that
a
cost you?
Money.
Millions and how many people? And they're gonna do it to say, you know, you can't do this to my child. Well, they can't do it to your child anyway. I think it's come down to really and truly. You've heard, we will not, we shall not comply. You know, I think it should be, we will not, we shall not submit. You don't submit to tyranny and slavery. You may not comply with the seatbelt law. And I think that that's been really the issue, and I think we've been barking up the wrong tree. We just say, like Shasta County has, in a lot of cases, just say no. What say you, sir?
I'm a big fan of what's the phrase? Professor Tom West talked about it in one of his books about refusing to carry out laws that are immoral and inconstitutional. Nullification. I'm working looking for the word nullification.
Nullification, right.
Nullification was talked about by our founding fathers as an avenue that citizens could pursue if they felt that the law was unconstitutional. And it was a commonly held belief that states could actually nullify federal laws they felt was unconstitutional all the way for the first 100 years of a country. And no one does it anymore, unfortunately, because there are a bunch of wimps in D.C., but are wimps in the state. But I would like to see school boards nullify and say, we're not following state law. And then what will happen? No state will come after them. There'll be a lawsuit. But maybe they have a chance in the course of the lawsuit to win.
Well, the thing is, you're right. If they have jurisdiction, you brought up a good point. It's jurisdiction. Who has jurisdiction? Unless you have jurisdiction to interpose, you have no right to nullify. I mean, you can't go to the liar, liar, pants on fire defense. The thing is, you have to understand that you have to have jurisdiction over something. At this point, the school boards do have jurisdiction over curriculum. And so, therefore, they just say no. They have the power to nullify it till it's changed. And I think that's kind of where these folks are going. Go ahead, sir.
So maybe they refuse to carry out some horrible curriculum standards.
Yes, sir.
And they end up in litigation. And they end up losing, and they appeal to the Supreme Court. And right now we have a fairly conservative Supreme Court. Maybe we actually win a case. We have to get more cases all the way up to the Supreme Court, I think, on the parental rights and religious freedom, First Amendment issues, because all over the country we're seeing outrageous mandates coming down from the State Department of Education and the legislatures telling parents they have no right to take the kid out of school during homosexual curriculum being taught at the same time, or telling parents they have no right to know that they're counseling their kid to take hormone blockers, and all these things which are openly and very obviously in violation of parental rights. So we need to get more litigation out there that hopefully goes all the way, maybe even to the Supreme Court. We might be able to affect change that way.
It costs money, and here's the thing about courts. When you have a situation when you go to court, rather than just not submitting, okay, just not submitting, just don't submit. Because if you go to court, there's a couple things that happen, Steve. Number one, it's going to be probably 5 years. Number one, we don't have 5 years. Number two, if you go to court, we spend the money to raise the money to go to court, and the government uses our money we give them to fight us. So we're paying for both sides of the argument. And that's why we have so many losses. And that's why we have situations like, for example, you know, whether you're for this or not for this isn't the issue. Homosexual marriage was voted on one certain way. It was voted by the people saying, no, we don't want it. The court overturned it. Okay? And what was that? 10 years ago? 8 years ago? 5 years ago? Who knows how long ago that was? So the point is a lot of times, every time we come out with the word lawsuit, and every time we come out with the word court, if we don't understand jurisdiction, interposition, and nullification, and we don't understand that we have to get a PI, if we don't get the PI, you're done. If you don't get a PI, you're there for years. You know, the old saying of justice delayed is justice denied. Well, the government does that all the time. What say you, sir?
Well, yeah, you want to put the bad policy on hold while you're fighting, because the fight could
be,
as you say, 5 years.
Yes, sir.
But, you know, there are a dozen Christian legal groups out there, Pacific Legal Foundation and Jay Sekulow's group, and American legal system, and I mean, there's about a dozen of them that I know of. And sometimes you're looking for precedent-setting education-related cases. And so, you know, if you are have a majority on a school board and you are thinking about this, it would probably be a good idea to sit down with one of these Christian legal groups and face-to-face and find out, is this a litigation they would be interested in taking up? And it would defray a lot of expenses and so forth and so on. So, you know, that might work. Brad Dacus, right, he's up there, I think, in Sacramento.
Yeah, I know Brad personally, and as far as Jay Sekulow goes, he was our attorney. We had a group called Pecan, if you remember, when the IRS was looking into all those groups that were apparently right-wing, and Obama said there's not a smidgen of proof. Well, we were one of the two 501c3s that Jay defended, and we won, and we beat the IRS, and we got our status. So I'm well aware of those situations, and Brad Dacus is great, but he is taking more of the faith-based position than he's going to take. And, you know, I mean, he take the faith-based position of this, but those guys are wonderful, but they're really overworked. You had something in the last part of your article that I thought was really good, and I forgive me, I don't remember what it was. It's like the last paragraph or something. You had a couple of good solutions, and we have about 5 minutes or so. If you could bring us home on that, that'd be great.
I'm trying to remember what I wrote. I don't have it.
I think Patricia has it here.
Tax credits? Is that what you're talking about?
What?
Educational tax?
Yeah.
Educational tax credits?
Yeah, I mean, there is a concern about vouchers. I should broach that topic because a voucher system is where the government gives you basically a blank check, and you can use that money for homeschool expenses, private school expenses, whatever. The concern by many constitutional attorneys on our side is that once you establish a financial connection between a private Christian school and the government, they're more likely to regulate you in the future. And that is a total legitimate concern. But tax credits are a little bit different. They're a little bit more removed. I mean, just like charities, if you give money to the Red Cross, you can write that off in your taxes. We should be able to write off on our taxes any kind of expenses related to the schools, and that is the case in some states and not in others, apparently. You're talking about education tax credit bill. I think Arizona is very involved with it, where they have a very generous program that you're able to write off a couple thousand dollars on your taxes if you send your kid to a private school. And they were kind of motivated to do that because their schools were overcrowded, and they actually, even a few moderates were okay with that because they thought, okay, maybe if we offer tax credits, and well, we reduce the overcrowding in some of the public schools. And, you know, that education tax credit is, I think, in place in about 20 states right now where they have generous tax credits. And that will help especially the lower-income parents who are trying to figure out how to afford private school options.
Yeah, and it's important that people understand it's not a tax write-off. It's a tax credit, which means they can take that write-off of the tax on Uncle Sam. We have 2 minutes left, my friend, or about a minute and a half. You want to bring us home on this? And thanks again for being on. But if you want to bring us home, that'd be great. Got about a minute and a half. Go ahead, sir.
Well, like I said earlier, we're at the very beginning of the divorce. We're trying to divorce the public school movement, and we're trying to place in the minds of our people that the public school option is not a natural option. It's not the founding option. It's not a constitutional option. It's not a biblical option. And we need to start breaking our minds away from thinking that public schools is American as apple pie, when it really isn't historically. And we need to get our people to start thinking of more options and more solutions and create foundations that help maybe contribute funds to private schools, new private Christian schools. We need more homeschool support networks that help lower-income parents afford that option. We need a whole array of different services to help homeschoolers and private school networks grow and get strong and be such a viable option that kids aren't going to whine and complain to their mom and dad, oh, I don't want to go to that private school or homeschool because they don't have, you know, they don't have a baseball team or whatever. We need to be able to offer not only a superior academic program, and one that's not completely dominated by brainwashing, but one that has all the amenities and the extracurricular activities. We're not there yet, and we have to get there. And I'm hoping that what the left is doing is going to help us get there quicker.
Okay. And, Steve, thank you so much. Steve Baldwin, a patriot and a man fighting for our kids. Time has come. You bet, brother. Time has come for 51. Let's get it done.
Seen the bill we all have to pay. It's not our bill. We had no say.